The Heavy Duty Parts Report is brought to you by Find It Parts, your ultimate destination for heavy duty truck and trailer parts. Discover a vast range of parts at finditparts.com. Ready to purchase the parts discussed in today's episode? Head over to finditparts.com and get them right away. You're listening to the Heavy Duty Parts Report. I'm your host, Jamie Irvin, and this is the podcast where you will get expert advice about the heavy-duty parts you need to keep your trucks and trailers rolling, lower your cost per mile, and keep you informed about what's happening in the industry. In this episode, we are going to discuss how to put the brakes on buying cheap brakes. To help us with that, I would like to introduce you to Bob Hicks, president of Marathon Brake. Bob has been in the heavy-duty brake business for 30-plus years. Bob was the director of sales at Carlisle for 23 years and has been the president of Marathon Brake for 10 years. This month, Bob is celebrating his 10-year anniversary at Marathon. Welcome to the podcast. Congratulations on 10 years with Marathon.
Thank you very much.
So, Bob, you're someone who's been in the industry for decades now. Just to maybe help us get to know you a little bit better, what do you like about the heavy-duty parts industry?
Unlike the automotive category, the heavy-duty business is a fairly small group of people. And as a result, since I've worked in it all my career, I know a vast number of people. And, you know, some are competitors, some not, but you know, some are customers, whatever it might be, but it's a very small group of people. And so you really become close to them. Whereas the passenger car industry is so huge, it's a completely different thing.
Yeah. One of my mentors told me that this is a people business. And as long as you remember that and treat people right, you'll do well in the heavy duty parts industry.
That's true. I mean, it's not as much today as it was 20 years ago. I mean, the relationship part of it still is important, but not nearly as what it used to be. With the advent of the marketing groups and these roll-ups that have bought up all these people, then the nature of the independent distributor network has changed a whole lot over the last 20 years. So that piece is different. And I'm quite frankly, that's one of the negatives as I see it with our industry, because as these more and more of these smaller distributors are gobbled up, not only do you lose the personalities of the companies that you dealt with all that time, but oftentimes the people that work in those places end up leaving because they're not happy there.
Consolidation is something that is happening across our industry. Doesn't seem to matter whether you're talking on the truck side, whether it's the truck dealers, or you're talking about aftermarket suppliers. What are some of the positives and the negatives, as you see it as a manufacturer of heavy-duty parts, for the end-user customer when this consolidation happens?
Well, I don't know that it benefits the end-user in any way. Depending on the size of the fleet, they're going to have a preference to either deal through the OEM channel or the independent distributors. And even with the big distributors like Truck Pro or Fleet Pride, the local fleet is still going to have a relationship with that local branch. And so most of the time, the smaller fleets are going to deal with the independent guys, and the larger fleets tend to go with the OES guys. For main reason being is the very large fleets want to negotiate aftermarket parts deals with an OEM most of the time, because they can leverage that with new truck sales or purchases and things of that nature, have consistent pricing if they have multiple locations. And so I think it really depends on the type of fleet that you're talking about, what their preference is going to be.
Who is Marathon Brake's ideal customer?
The ideal customer for us is an independent distributor that relines brake shoes in his own facility. That represents about 50% of our business, and that's the sweet spot for us. The other 50% of our business is lining that goes through very large rebuilders, like in Canada, for example, would be Gorilla Brake, somebody like that. And they, in turn, reline brake shoes and sell them to wholesalers. And most of those wholesalers are either small distributors or truck dealers. And so our business is about 50-50 between those two channels.
What would you say Marathon does better than any other friction manufacturer?
We have two major advantages. We have a distribution center outside of Atlanta where we hold a tremendous amount of inventory. And as a result of that, we're able to turn around our customers' orders within 24 hours with a 98% fill rate. None of our competitors can do anything near that. So that offers our distributors a big advantage because they know they can rely on us to turn their orders around quickly. And typically, they only place an order, once a week because they know they're going to get it within a few days. That's probably the biggest advantage we have. The second advantage that I would say that we excel in is our sales organization. We have sales guys that are very, very seasoned veterans that really understand the foundation break. And we're able to differentiate our product or our company because of the level of expertise that they have, primarily to train not only the distributors, sales, and counter people, but also the fleet, mechanic guys. Our guys spend most of their time doing that type of stuff. Our competitors don't have guys that focus on brakes. Our competitors, you know, are normally people like Federal-Mogul who sell a whole range of products. They don't have any brake experts anymore. They did years ago, but they don't anymore. Another competitor would be Meritor. They sell a wide range of products too. Once again, they don't have brake specialists. And so we have a level of expertise in our sales organization not found elsewhere. And so we use that to help us justify paying a higher price for a better quality product, which in today's market is very difficult to do because everybody's so focused on the purchase price of a set of brake shoes or whatever else it might be.
100%. Actually, one of the main focuses of this podcast is to really educate people about cost per mile versus purchase price. Now, let me ask you something. Talking about getting into that more technical side, why is high density brake lining so important?
Well, the real reason that the high density product is beneficial has more to do with the brake shoe itself than the friction. I mean, the density means that it's heavier. You can, if you pick up a set of product of ours compared to our competitors, it's noticeably heavier. And that's just because it's denser. It does cost more because it's heavier, so it costs more to ship, things like that. But it also offers strength in the friction material itself. And one of the product issues that we have, especially in places like Canada and the upper Midwest and in the Northeast, are rust jacking problems where rust builds up on the shoe table between the friction and the table. And when that happens, it forces the lining away from the top of the shoe and the lining will crack. That's why if you have a really tough material that's dense, it resists that far longer. I mean, it's not resist proof, don't get me wrong, but it's far less brittle than a lot of other products out there.
You see a lot of products advertised, you know, marketing does a good job on the outside of the box and everybody says 23,000 pound lining. And we see the word premium very liberally applied to brakes. And I know from someone who sold brakes for a long time, that word premium has been applied from the cheapest brakes on the marketplace to the most expensive. You know, they think they're buying quality, but they're not. So how do we help them make a quality decision?
Well, I think it really depends on the way we approach a customer and describe to him, based on their application, what's the appropriate material for them. Just as an example, we offer six or seven different products in both 20,000 pound axle range and also 23K. And so our guys are experts in identifying what product they should recommend for specific applications, and that's what we do. As far as the discussion about why the Marathon product is different other than the density is one of the tools that our guys have is they carry around little cups of all of our different raw materials. And the raw materials that are used in lining is really the key to the quality of it and how it's going to perform. And we try to describe that to our customers in a way that makes it easier for them to understand because typically, especially if it's an OEM dealer, when they're trying to sell a brake shoe to a fleet customer, they don't even know what it is they have. They're selling on price. And needless to say, that's not very beneficial to us as a manufacturer. And in many cases, it's detrimental to a fleet too, because he's buying something with an expectation that it's going to perform for his application, whereas it may not. And a lot of it's driven because he's looking for the cheapest price.
let's talk a little bit more about that formulation of friction material, because I'm going to ask you if this is an accurate statement, and then we can get into it a little more. Is it accurate to say that the majority of cost in manufacturing friction is in the material, not in the labor, not in the, you know, the table and the web and the steel and the shipping and all of that, that the majority of the cost is actually in the friction? So if you're going to get a cheaper brake, chances are they've had to take something out of the friction to bring down the purchase price. Is that an accurate statement? And let's go deep into that. Why is that an accurate statement if it is?
It is. It is an accurate statement. The raw material represents way more than 50% of the cost. And the cost of the raw material, depending on what it is, can vary dramatically as well. Because we have to offer economy products as well, because there's a certain segment of the market that that's really all they want. And so in order for us to participate in that part of the market, we have to make products like that too. But when we do that, we sacrifice the raw materials that we use in order to take cost out. And generally what that does is it does two things. It'll make the material weaker and not stronger, and it'll make it wear faster instead of wearing as best as you possibly can support. So yeah, that's basically it in a nutshell. The raw materials are critical.
When it comes to the strength of a lining, I've heard something called a transverse rupture test. I have no idea what that is. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah. What you do is you cut a piece of lining about 4 inches long and about a half an inch wide. And you put it on a machine that's got a gap in the center, and you rest the two ends of the lining on either side. And there's a ram that will come down on the center of the piece, and it'll push down until the lining actually breaks. And what you're measuring is that. How much pressure does it take before the material fails? And that's what that test is for.
Okay, so how does that translate into a better friction material in real world application then? If the transverse rupture test comes back with a higher number than a competitor's, like, what does that mean to me if I'm buying your product?
It means that it's going to be stronger, and it's going to be far less susceptible to imperfections of the shoe table and or rust jacking, like I described before.
Okay. And when a brake shoe cracks and a piece of it cracks off because it's not strong, then what does that do inside the drum when that happens between service intervals?
You know, it depends on where it cracks, of course, and whether or not the lining actually falls off the shoe. A lot of times the lining doesn't fall off the shoe, but it's actually cracked right where the rivets are, where it's held onto the shoe table, whether it's caused by rust or some other mechanism. That's generally where it cracks. And when that happens, typically the lining is going to be loose, and you're not going to get the same amount of performance as you would normally. And of course, when a wheel is inspected on the side of the road, if that is a brake is found like that with cracks, they got to do a brake job on the side of the street. And that's dangerous and it's costly. So that's fleets don't want to have that. That's a bad thing.
Downtime is the most significant cost, I think. It's unbelievable how quickly profit can erode when you've got downtime that's unscheduled.
That's right.
Let me ask you something, Bob. When it comes to brake fade, what is it?
First of all linings fade. What's important is at what temperature that it fades, and also how fast it recovers after it cools down. And so once again, this gets back to the raw material content. What you really want to have is a lining that provides the amount of retardation that's been designed for the axle load that you have. And you want it to fade at some point, because all linings will fade out and there won't be any friction at all. And you can't let the fit lining get too hot, because it won't work anymore. And so it has to fade a little bit. But the key is how quickly it recovers once the temperature starts to drop again, because it takes a while for a brake to cool down like that. And typically what causes that extremely high temperature is either driver abuse, or in some cases the adjuster is not correct and the lining is being dragged. That causes tremendous amount of heat. And there's a variety of other things that might cause, sometimes you hear about wheel fires. I mean, I remember just 2 weeks ago, we had an incident where a bus had a wheel fire and it burned a bus down. I mean, those are really expensive problems to have. So, but that's the fade is actually designed into the lining itself, and you want to have some, but you don't. Just as an example, that's the way drum brakes are designed. Disc brakes virtually have no fade whatsoever. I mean, in order for a disc brake to not be able to perform, it's got to get extremely hot. And that's why at different times during the last 20 years, having, for example, a truck with a disc brake system on it and a trailer with a drum brake system, because the vehicle that's got disc brakes, they're not going to fade, and the drum brakes will. So it's just the nature of the design of the S-cam brake versus a disc brake.
We have a lot of customers that operate in the mountains. So brake fade is something that happens, I guess, that heat is generated because of the tremendous weight that they're trying to slow down coming down the side of a rocky mountain. But in another application, we deal with a lot of people that are off-road. Their wheels are submersed in mud and sand and dirt. At times, they're even being pulled by D8 cats to get on and off a lease site. This is a pretty extreme environment. What things should a mechanic be thinking about, or a small fleet, when they're looking at buying brakes when they're in that kind of an environment?
That's a difficult question, because brakes were not designed to run in that type of environment, because you want to have a clean surface between the friction and the brake drum. And so if you have sand in there, sand is especially bad because it's an abrasive that will score the drum and the friction itself. And so it's going to wear out the brake lining very quickly. Mud is not as bad, but it's not going to help the stopping power, because if you have mud in there, you're not going to get the same amount of braking power that you normally would. So the off-road environment that you're describing is extremely difficult, and they really have to maintain these things almost on a daily basis to make sure that the drum to friction mating surface is kept clean. Brakes don't work if they're not.
What is a simple way to set up a system to measure cost per mile? Like, have you seen anything, or could you share anything with us from your experience of how somebody would go about doing that?
Well, I'll tell you how we would go about promoting that concept. We developed a spreadsheet many years ago that you can do in front of a customer to explain what cost per mile means when it comes to replacement brake linings. For example, you have to take a look at all of the components that go into doing a brake job. It's not just replacing the brake shoes. Most times they're going to replace a drum. They should at least rebush the camshafts. They have to replace wheel seals, all those type of things. And basically, we put together a spreadsheet that can calculate what the cost of those different components are. And even just to say, let's take for an example, a guy that wants to buy a brake shoe for $10 versus one that might cost $15. Well, that $15 brake shoe, if it extends the life of the brake job by 30 or 40%, that $5 that you paid for it is not a difficult thing to recover, because if you get that much more life, it means you're not going to have to put those other components back into it. And over the life of the vehicle, it's much cheaper to maintain friction material if you can extend the service life. And it's really depend, and it's not just the components, it's also the labor aspect of it. Doing a brake job, you know, takes a couple of hours and of a mechanic's time, plus the truck is not in working. It's tied up. So it's labor, it's the component parts, and just the downtime.
You're listening to the Heavy Duty Parts Report. I'm your host, Jamie Irvin, and we've been speaking with Bob Hicks, president of Marathon Brake. And we've been talking about what makes a truly premium friction material, also the importance of cost per mile over purchase price. Now, Bob, with the Marathon lineup, you mentioned that there are a number of different products that you manufacture, different grades. And I was hoping to talk to you a little bit about that, because really this is now a conversation, not just about cost per mile, but also application. So sometimes there are applications where a customer genuinely doesn't need a premium brake lining. Do you have a product that fits that kind of a scenario?
We have a product that fits every scenario and also fits the price points that are required in the marketplace by our competitors. And so, yeah, we do. If a fleet is operating over the highway and is not doing a lot of significant braking, a lower cost brake lining will likely perform pretty well. On the other hand, a sanitation truck is not going to have the same situation. They're going to have very high temperatures in the brakes. They need a severe duty material in order to not have to reline it every 2 weeks. So it's a completely different application, and it really gets down to the heat that the brake sees. That's what's the bad thing for friction is too much heat.
Okay, so it's heat that we're thinking about. So if you have an application where there isn't high heat situations, you're not doing a lot of braking, a more economical product, that one that you provide, could work perfect for that scenario. What about someone, let's say we're in that off-road situation, and no matter what you're going to do, because you're in that environment, you're really only looking to get from CVIP to CVIP, 1 year of service. Is there a product that's kind of in the middle range that would be appropriate cost, would get them that year's life?
Yeah, and we would offer it in both 20 and 23,000 pound ranges. And actually, we have other linings that rate up to 28,000 pounds too. It depends on the type of truck, because there's not a whole lot of those really heavy axles, but there's some out there, and they require a very specific brake light. Now, the ones that are used on those really severe heavy axles, we don't make in cheap products. You got to make the material that you know is going to hold up to the heat that it's going to see. But in the off-highway description that you just offered, there's middle-of-the-road type linings that would probably be very adequate, where it may not make sense to put up the best product available because it's going to wear out prematurely anyway, especially if it's going to see debris like sand and things of that nature.
What elements does that kind of middle of the road brake have? Like, what features about that brake make it good, make it last that, let's say, 1 year that we're looking to get out of it?
Well, let's reverse it from the other side. What the difference is in the raw materials between our premium products to the middle of the road products to the economy grade products are all related to what's in the raw materials. And as you remove a certain percentage of your more expensive raw materials, typically what you sacrifice is wear. Not performance, because regardless of whether it's an economy grade product or premium grade product, it still has to pass the 121 test at the axle load that it's recommended for. So the actual retardation that the lining puts out would be the same regardless of what grade it is. But what's going to be sacrificed as you go down the food chain in the quality aspect is going to be wear. That's the primary difference.
So that's why we see so many brakes with that 23,000 pound number stamped on the side of it in their marketing, is because everybody's got to pass that. It's just, how long will you be able to operate at that level?
Well, the 23,000 thing that you just mentioned is something that's badly misunderstood in our industry. 90% of the trucks that are on the road don't have 23,000 pound axles. They have 20,000 pound axles, almost all of them, except for a straight truck that's only got one axle, or a tractor that's only got one axle. But most of the tractors that are out there are tandems. Those axles are not rated at 23,000 pounds. They're 20. And that's what goes on them when a truck is built at the factory. In places like Canada, everybody uses 23,000 pound lining, regardless of what the axle load is, because I don't know, it's always been that way. And we've seen more and more of it here in the United States too, as there's been more and more offshore suppliers bringing in private label product. And the way they promote it is that it's a 23,000 pound lining, so it must be better. And that's the way it's sold. Not so much for the fact that it's designed for 23K axles. They're trying to equate 23,000 pounds with a higher quality. And that's just rubbish. It's just not the way it is.
So we're going to provide listeners with the ability to use that spreadsheet so that they are going to be able to track their cost per mile. This is going to allow them to test different linings. When it comes to the big fleets, are they always testing?
You know, the guy that's a maintenance manager that's responsible for, let's say, 20,000 trucks and trailers, I mean, if they can save a little bit on a component like a brake, that can save them a ton of money over the years in the life cycle of a truck. So a lot of these guys do evaluate products on an ongoing basis. And as long as they keep track of what they're doing and when they're doing it, how many miles it's going, it's a worthwhile exercise to do. Because most manufacturers are very willing to help in that evaluation process, provided the fleet's willing to do it.
Right, of course. And I think if some of these larger fleets are testing, they're looking at different linings, they're measuring things. The smaller fleets that perhaps are operating on smaller budgets, rates are really tough right now in Canada, that's for sure. Money is not, you know, it's not a situation where money is flowing too easily right now in this part of the world. So if you can save, that is going to improve the profitability of your business. It's going to make you more competitive against your competitors who are trying to put price pressure on you. It's not just about the heavy duty parts industry, whatever business you're in, whatever you're hauling, you've got price pressure too. This can be an actual competitive advantage for your business.
That's right. That's right.
Now, when it comes to the future of brakes, we know that disc brakes are becoming more and more prevalent. We're starting to see them in the oil patch. We're seeing them on highway. We're seeing them in a lot of different applications. What are your thoughts about where the industry is going with friction?
It depends on the vocation, but just as an example, in the mass transit business, those buses, they have already gone all air disc brake. The transition started about 5 years ago. And now there aren't any buses that are built that even have drum brakes. So that part of the business has already changed for a number of reasons drove that. But that the bus market is really small compared to trucks and trailers. And so I think, and the buses are very expensive anyway. So to add another couple $1,000s for a disc brake when you're buying a vehicle, it might cost $200,000 or $300,000. It's a very small thing. And so the transition took place fairly quick. On the truck side and trailer side, the transition is going to take much longer. Right now, I would estimate that 20% of the new tractors going into the marketplace have air disc brakes today. And it appears like in the last year, that has picked up pace. For the prior 5 years, it started very, very slowly. But we're starting to see more of that today. And one of the reasons that there's been reluctance for the fleets to embrace air disc brakes is because they are more expensive. It typically will cost, I'm talking about on a new truck, it'll typically add $1,200 or $1,500 per axle for an air disc brake compared to a drum brake. And so a lot of guys don't see the benefit of doing that. And so they just opt out to stay with the standard product, which is a S-cam brake, which they've been running for forever, and they're familiar with it. There's disc brake issues as it relates to maintenance that the guys are not familiar with. And so, but it really gets down to a cost thing. And let me explain to you why. If you take a look at the market in Europe as an example, the truck manufacturers over there, they always designed and manufactured their own brakes. And so their volumes were fairly small. So the cost of a drum brake was very, very high. Here in the United States, none of the manufacturers of trucks make their own brakes. They buy them from Bendix or they buy them from Meritor, and they're made in huge volumes. So the costs are very low. And so the transition to an air disc brake, where the volumes at this point in this market are not very high, makes them a lot more expensive. And just as a side note, one of the things that's been happening recently in Europe is a lot of the fleets have decided that having the air disc brake is not beneficial enough for it to warrant a difference in the price, and they're going back to drum brakes. So they jumped in all the way over there a long time ago, and now they're starting to retract a little bit. I think what'll happen here is we'll see the tractor business go increase air disc incrementally every year for the next 10 years, and it'll get bigger and bigger. I think the trailer industry will be take much longer, because typically the guys that are buying trailers, they don't view them with the same mindset as they do when they're buying a tractor. They think of it just as a box with wheels on it. And if it's going to cost them more money to put air disc, most fleets are going to decide not to do that.
We've seen a lot of fanfare about Nikola Motor Company coming out with an all-electric truck, the electrification of trucks and their powertrain. Do you see there being an impact on brakes specifically, but also on the heavy duty parts industry as a whole, as this comes on board. Sometimes for me, when I look at some of this stuff, I wonder how much of it is just kind of fanfare and how long will it actually take to roll out and be part of our day to day, you know, business life.
Once again, I think this gets back to the vocation. If you're talking about a totally electric truck or bus for that matter, it really is going to be limited to a fleet where the truck comes home all the time because they have to be able to charge these things. And it's the same thing with buses. You know, we go to the American Public Transit Authority meetings, and this is one of the subjects that comes up all the time is electric buses, because an electric bus is extremely expensive. But I will say this, if the market goes more and more with electric vehicles, it's not going to help us at all, because typically they have retarders that work within the axle to slow the vehicle, and the brakes are not really what stops it until it gets to be, you know, going 5 miles an hour. And so, yeah, the friction material industry will be hurt significantly as the market goes more to electric type of buses and trucks.
And do you see the rollout of that being incremental over a 10-year period, 20-year period?
I don't know. I think we'll see. It'll probably take at least 10 years for it to be any sizable part of the market. But once again, I think it's going to be limited to certain types of fleets. The ones that are like maybe delivery, pickup and delivery vehicles, like within the city, like a medium duty truck, that would probably be a perfect application for something like that. But not an over the highway tractor or trailer. To me, it just doesn't make any sense. Because first of all, most of those vehicles, or a lot of those vehicles, they don't come home at night. They may not see that truck for a week. It's just not practical because there is no infrastructure across the country to charge these vehicles.
Oh, so the infrastructure for charging, just like I guess when gasoline engines became prolific, the infrastructure to fuel them across the country had to take place before the industry really took off. It's kind of the same thing when it comes to the electrification of vehicles. Until that infrastructure is in place, those grids are in place, it's going to be difficult.
That's right.
You've been listening to the Heavy Duty Parts Report. I'm your host, Jamie Irvin, and we've been speaking with Bob Hicks, president of Marathon Brake. To learn more about Marathon Brakes, go to marathonbrake.com. Bob, thank you for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
The key takeaway from this episode is that the purchase price, what your brakes cost when you buy them, is not the most important metric. How long those brakes last and how many miles you get between brake jobs is more important. If you would like a copy of the template to calculate your cost per mile, please go to heavydutypartsreport.com. And in the show notes for this episode, I will provide a link to download that template. In our next episode, we are going to talk about air conditioning. Now, let me know if this has ever happened to you. Man, I do love summertime, but it is hot. Oh, it's so hot, man. I just got in my truck. It's so hot. Well, it's okay. I got AC. Hey, what happened? Ah, no, my AC packed it in. Son of a... Well, I don't want that to happen to you this summer. In next episode, we are going to talk about air conditioning, and we're going to talk about what is important when maintaining an air conditioning system and what parts you should be buying this summer to make sure this doesn't happen to you. I'll talk to you next episode. HDA Truck Pride is the heart of the independent parts and service channel. They have 750 parts stores and 450 service centers conveniently located across the U.S. and Canada. Visit heavydutypartsreport.com/HDA Truck Pride today to find a location near you. Again, that's heavydutypartsreport.com/HDA Truck Pride, and let the heart of the independent service channel take care of your commercial equipment.